77 WABC. And now, the longest-running program in the history of 77 WABC, Religion on the Line, with Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Religion Online. I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick. Rabbi Potasnik is taking a holy day today. Today, which is kind of neat, is Pentecost for the Western Christians. It's the day of the Holy Spirit. Many of the liturgies will be wearing red. We'll be celebrating this great gift. Many people say it's the birthday of the church, which is wonderful. But our Jewish brothers and sisters are also celebrating Pentecost, and for them it's the reception of the law, which is very much like the Spirit. It's the way in which they become one with their God. It's the way in which our God, in which they kind of attach themselves and realize what it is that that we live for and how we live. So it's a wonderful day. I'm glad the rabbi's getting a little rest, and I'm very excited about being the quarterback today, as you might know. So we have an excellent show. We have in a few moments we're going to be speaking to couple of people who are involved in helping kids who are in foster care transition out. I don't know if any of you have like kids of your own that you know they move out of the house and you have to kind of figure out how to get them ready with things like linens and pots and pans and all the things that go with that. Not to mention the support that's needed, the emotional, the you know, love that you need when you're beginning to start new. And we have two guests that'll be speaking to us about that: Mary Therese McCabe. And Greg Spiro, and I'm looking forward to that. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're actually going to do it through two segments. I have five of among the best of Xaverian students, and I thought we would take some time looking at some issues in the world, but not from the talking heads that talk radio usually has, but from kids who are inheriting what we're going to give them, and they're all sharp kids. So I'm looking forward to a wonderful show, despite the fact I carry the heavy grief of no rabbi today, but he's with me in spirit. And what's great is he can't text me or anything either until tonight. So I can really get away with almost anything. So I'm very excited about that. To our Christians, just for a couple of moments, it is Pentecost, and it's one of the great holidays, holy days of the church calendar, of what it is to be Christian. So if you forget or you're not sure or you're not a Christian, here's how this works. So we have the Holy Week, which is the Passion of Jesus and the death of Jesus on Good Friday. Then on Sunday morning, on Easter Sunday, we have the resurrection of Jesus. And then for 40 days, there's a time in which Jesus is with his apostles and his disciples, and he's giving them kind of last-minute stuff, assuring them that truly he is risen. And on Ascension Thursday, which is about 10 days ago, he rises into the heavens and fully human, fully divine, fully alive, resurrected. And then there's this 10-day period where we kind of just hang out and we're afraid, and the apostles are gathered in a room and they're petrified. And then all of a sudden there's this burst of the Spirit that comes in, and all of a sudden their fears are gone, and they have these great abilities that kind of give them the ability to preach. And the first reading today from Acts of the Apostles talks about how Peter could speak to everybody from different nations. They all heard them in their own voice, although he only spoke the one language. It's a tremendous song, story, and it's one that's full of excitement and just kind of almost too good to be true. You know, we wonder, like, does Pentecost happen to me, to you? You know, I don't have this, sitting alone in my room, frightened, and then all of a sudden having a bang, like this wild experience. But I wonder if what we see here is not like this moment of infusing of grace or God's presence, but maybe what we have is this idea of the idea of that our eyes are open. That our ears are unplugged, that our heart is taken away the weight that prevents us from seeing this grace. That the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, this coming of the Spirit, gives us an ability to trust in the fact that God has always been with us. And it's not so much that there's this new infusion of grace that God didn't have before, but maybe it's giving us the ability to realize it. And maybe the first time we've realized it since Adam and Eve. And then the responsibility that comes with that. So if you are a believer, And I don't mean if you're a priest or a deacon, religious, a bishop, a head of some kind of Catholic organization, a Christian organization, a minister, whatever it is that you do. I'm talking about like everybody who's baptized. There's a responsibility that goes with this. And it's not just the big boys and girls, but it's everybody who calls, the Lord, Jesus Lord. Anybody who believes in the living God, to kind of extend it out further. We have a responsibility to share that. St. Francis, who's a deacon, by the way, St. Francis said, preach always and use words if you have to. Same thing is true here. I'm not expecting all Christians to stand on street corners and preach. If you can do that, mazel tov. But it's really just by our lives. Do people look at you and wonder, what do you know that they don't? And that's the challenge of a Christian, I think. If we're gonna do this, do we stand out, or are we just like everybody else? Is this something about us? And this is true of anybody who has a relationship with the living God. Do they look at us and say, what do they know? What do they see? What do they hear? I think that's what Pentecost is all about. And we're going to see that today. We're going to see that with people who saw a need and went out of their way to do it. And when we speak to them, you can see how humble they are. And they're going to say, it's not me, we just did it. But they did it, and they're changing lives. We're going to hear five young kids who are really bright and articulate and have dreams and hopes for the future. That's what it all comes down to. So whether you're praising the delivery of the law for our Jewish brothers and sisters, for the delivery of the Spirit, or opening our eyes to the Spirit, for our Christians, and for the Eastern Christians, you guys will be doing it very soon too. But let's see what our responsibility is and how we can, in our own ways, kind of push forward the message that we have a God who cares, a God who loves, a God who saves, and a God who is with us all the time. We're going to do some business, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to get to speak to Mary and Greg about the great work that they're doing.
Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick will be right back on 77 WABC. Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick, 77 WABC.
Welcome back to Religion Online. I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick, flying solo today. The rabbi is celebrating the holy day of Pentecost, where the Jews celebrate the reception of the law. And the Western Christians are celebrating Pentecost, where we celebrate the receiving of the Spirit. So it's very exciting. Just before our interview, we have a really cool giveaway. It's a pair of tickets to see the Sistine Chapel Choir at Radio City Music Hall on July 7th. Now, the Sistine Chapel Choir, it's their first ever performance at Radio City Music Hall. It's going to be on Saturday, the 7th of July. It's also going to feature the St. Patrick's Cathedral Choir, which is also wonderful. If you've ever heard them in anything, how beautiful they are. Well, these angelic voices of the Sistine Chapel Choir have garnered critical acclaim and recognition as they travel and perform around the globe. Through its liturgical music, the choir communicates a message of peace and closeness among people. And even if you're not Catholic, and even if you're not Christian, and even if you don't believe in God, it's still worth your time to see the beauty that's there. Purchase your tickets at Ticketmaster.com, which is very good. But because Religion Online is so close to the Vatican, we have a pair of tickets that we'd love to give away. If you're the 10th caller now, you have a chance to win a pair of tickets, and that would be at 212-268-WABC. That's 212-268-9222. Now, you have to be in the listening area, which is interesting because Pat Power is in Iowa and he's in the listening area. So I think they mean the metropolitan area, and promotion needs, you need an email address to be able to receive the tickets. So, give a call now, 212-268-WABC, and get your chance to win tickets to this really beautiful, beautiful event. All right, with that being said, speaking of beautiful events, we have the real honor to be with Mary Teresa McComb and Greg Spiro. Now, Mary Teresa is she's a retired CPA. She lives with her husband John. They have three young sons, and she's doing great stuff, and she's always been a frequent volunteer for Catholic organizations. But she founded Heart to Homes. Now, what's beautiful about this is that it's a situation where it assists newly independent young adults who have just aged out of foster care. And this assistance alleviates some of the stress during the initial transition by providing the essential furnishings for a new home. On a much less level, I have two daughters that have moved out and gone on their own. It's good for them. It's wonderful. And I know how crazy that was. So I can only imagine here with kids who have a, kind of a limited amount of resources to begin with. And also with us is Greg Spiro, who is the treasurer and a board member of Heart to Homes. And he is works as a consultant in financial service industry for over 30 years. But more importantly, he and I are both graduates of Cathedral College. We were very good friends back then and continue to be, but we just don't see each other or get into the adventures that we did some 30 or 40 years ago. So, Mary Therese, thank you so much. Greg, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us on, Kevin. I appreciate it very much.
So of all the things that you could have done, Mary Teresa, why did you choose this?
Well, my husband and I were doing some private philanthropy with Cardinal McCluskey Community Services for foster kids who were in higher ed. And we were helping to fill some of the financial gaps for some of those kids. And one of the young adults that we were helping was getting ready to graduate from college. And I said, and now what happens? Like, what happens, because he's in foster care now while he's in college, but what happens when he graduates? And that's when I learned that when kids age out of foster care, there is some money available for them, and it helps them to establish their first apartment, but then they're on their own. And when I heard how much money it was, I thought, having had the same experience as you, having helped some of my sons move into their first apartment, I thought, well, that's hardly enough money to do anything.
Right.
And sure enough, I said, well, that's hardly enough money. And I was told, yes, generally these kids wind up in an apartment with just a bed and a dresser and very little else. And I thought, well, I have a group of girlfriends. You know, we have a book club, very typical suburban moms. And I thought, well, maybe we could throw like a little online virtual housewarming.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put together a list of items that we called our wish list, and people get to check off what they want on the wish list, and we filled the first apartment, and then the second apartment, and then the third apartment, and it really took off using Facebook and social media. Lots of friends, and friends of friends, and friends of friends of friends all really felt taken with this particular mission and said, how can I help? How can I help?
And it's changing lives. Cork, how did you get involved?
Mary Teresa and I grew up together, and she was the one that introduced me to, you know, to see if I would take a look and contribute. And I hate shopping. However, the way the website was set up, everything is listed there. You don't have to do any thinking. You just have to do your clicking. So right away, it brought back memories many years ago when I moved out of state after college to take a job in a new city. Luckily, an old classmate of ours and his wife lived in, it was down in Wilmington, Delaware. So told them I was moving down there, gave them my tale of woe that I had to furnish an apartment. My buddy's wife volunteered to do all the shopping for me. Mm-hmm. So I just had to give her the credit card. The amount of items and the what I'll call unique items that she, you know, she got, I was like, wow, would have never thought of, you know, this thing or that thing. So after 2 hours, the shopping was done, and I was thrilled, absolutely thrilled. So the first time I was sitting down, you know, on the website for Hearts to Homes, I'm thinking, okay, yep, here are all the things that, you know, that are needed. And Mary Teresa and the crew did a very good job of trying to identify, you know, what are those things. So for me to start out just by saying, okay, they definitely need a basic tools, the hammer, the screwdriver, the flashlights, the batteries, everything was there. So you just point and click. Very easy.
Mary Teresa, how does somebody get involved in your program? Now, we'll talk about the website, which is hearttohomes.com, and it's on Facebook and all the things of that. And we'll repeat that again, and I'll put that up on my own website, not my website, but my social media stuff. But how does a young person come and how do they find you, or how do you find them?
Well, first of all, the website is hearttohomes.org.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Hearttohomes.org. Very
yes,
good.
Yes, it is. So in order to be assisted by Hearts to Homes, a young adult has to be in foster care 18 years of age or older, have a high school diploma or GED, and be a resident of New York City, Westchester, or Rockland counties, and be affiliated with one of our partner agencies. And right now, we have three partner agencies: Cardinal McCluskey Community Services, which was our first agency, Catholic Guardian Services, and Leakin Watts, which recently changed its name to Rising Ground. We are preparing for a new expansion in June to a fourth agency. And the reason that we're expanding this way is because, you know, we started with one agency and realized that we had the capacity to help more kids than the housing crisis in New York City was allowing this one agency's kids to find housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so while we were helping kids as they aged out from this one agency, there were kids aging out from other agencies, and they didn't have this help. And there are over 900 kids that age out every single year in New York City from foster care. So we're helping the tip of the iceberg, and I hope that one day we'll grow large enough to help all of them. But the minute we realized that there were more kids that needed help and that we were able to help them because we had donors that were willing to help them, to Cardinal McCluskey's credit, their board allowed us to spin off as a separately incorporated charitable organization, and we launched in November of 2017 as our own charity. So right now we're helping three agencies. Two are headquartered in Westchester County and one in New York City. But it's interesting, 80% of the kids that we help are residents of Manhattan or the Bronx.
Wow. Mary Teresa and Greg, we're coming to the end of the interview because of time. I'm sorry it went so quickly. But if I know Greg pretty well, and I don't know you, Mary Teresa, but if you know Greg, then I kind of think I do. And if I asked you guys if you were holy, you would tell me like I was high. You would say, like, I'm not holy. I just do my job. I do what I can. But you, both of you, you hear the echo of God calling you to do something, and in a real way, you've touched the lives of kids, young kids who need it in such a desperate way. And not, you know, only with rosaries and masses and stuff, but with real sweat and using the things that are available. What a way to celebrate Pentecost. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Kevin.
So it's hearts2home.org, and we'll send you up a bunch of ways to get through that. You guys are terrific. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Be well. Happy Pentecost.
77 WABC. And now, the longest-running program in the history of 77 WABC, Religion on the Line, with Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick.
Welcome back to Religion on the Line. I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick. Happy Pentecost. If you're a Jewish, happy reception of the law. The rabbi is enjoying a day of celebration with you, and that's why I get to fly solo. To all the Western Christians, happy Gift of the Spirit Day in Pentecost. And for our Eastern Christians, that'll be happening in a few days as well. Usually when Joe's not around, you know, I bring some people in. We have some great folks that have been here as co-hosts, or else I'll run solo and bring in some guests. But we did something like this about 6 months ago, where I invited some of my students in. And it was a really great kind of experience. It was something that I found very refreshing. And I thought, you know, since it's a special kind of day, to bring in some of Severian's best and kind of speak to them about what's going on in the world. So it's sort of like CNN or Fox without yelling at each other. And I wouldn't be surprised if they actually know more than some of those pundits do. So it's with great excitement for that. But before I get to them, I have to tell you about a great giveaway. We have a pair of tickets to see the Sistine Chapel Choir at Radio City Music Hall. George from Nutley, New Jersey, has already won his pair, and now it's your turn to do so. The Sistine Chapel Choir, first ever performance at Radio City Music Hall, will be on Saturday, July 7th. It'll also feature the St. Patrick's Cathedral Choir, which is also wonderful. These angelic voices of the Sistine Chapel Choir have gained critical acclaim and recognition as they travel and perform around the globe. Through its liturgical music, the choir communicates a message of peace and closeness among people. And even if you're not Catholic, not Christian, not a believer, doesn't matter. There's still something about the beauty of and excellence that's there that will touch your souls. You can purchase your tickets at MasterCard. You could purchase your tickets at Ticketmaster.com. But if you're the first, if you're the 10th caller, you will receive a pair of tickets to the show, and you can call right now, 212-268-WABC, just like George from Nutley, New Jersey did, 212-268-9222. You need to be in the station's listening area, which I think means the metropolitan area, because we do have people listening all over the world. Pat Powers, how are you in Iowa? And you need an email address. So why don't you give a call right now, 212-268-WABC, and you can meet George from Nutley, New Jersey, as you enjoy this wonderful event. One more time, 212-268-WABC. All right, guys, welcome. Thank you for being here. The poor things got up. They're coming from all over the metropolitan area. They got up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock, and it's just great for you to hear. So I have Emma Baldwin, Emma Cassidy, Anthony Cerulli, and Alex Russo, who are sophomores at Severian, and I have Louis Savoia, who is a junior. They're also involved in our speech and debate team, which is it's probably my favorite thing. Don't tell the athletes and stuff, but they're my favorite team. But Mr. Lisi likes everybody, so he's the boss. Anyway, so guys, thank you very much for being here. Thank your parents for driving you. Special shout out to the Baldwins for helping us with this. So here's my first question to you. When I watch the news, my stomach turns. Not from a liberal or conservative point of view, although we all have our perspective. But the fact that we're in a situation where if you don't agree with me, you're wrong, and if you're wrong, you're evil. And that just a complete ad hominem approach that seems to have taken over since before you were born, frankly. But I'm just curious, I'm an old man, you're young people, what are you thinking? And I'm going to be quiet. You can't be quiet, though. This is crazy. Don't be polite. Pretend it's the lunchroom, okay?
Yeah, I think, like, when I come home...
Just identify yourself.
Oh, Emma. I'm Emma Baldwin. Sometimes when I come home from school or wherever I am and the news will be on and, like, I'll see it and I'll just see everything that's going on and I see how totally one-sided it is. And if you even think about the other side, then it's just people constantly coming at you. And I think that either side anymore, like the liberal and conservative or like Republican and Democrat parties, like Lewis was telling me before, that they aren't truly what they were at one point. And they're not really what they stand for, because it's everything has become so one-sided and like almost manipulated in a way. So that's kind of what I think about it.
Lewis Savoia. To go off of that, I think it's interesting that we bring up CNN and Fox News, because they really don't even tell the full story about the political parties, because actually when you watch them, it's very, very clear that everything they do is scripted, and you know that there's a flow to what they're doing that's been already documented and set out from the beginning. And that's why, you know, you have, like on Fox News, they'll bring on the, you know, quote-unquote Democratic expert on X issue, and they'll just keep regurgitating party line ideas without actually bringing in anything else. And actually, somebody who's kind of far on the left, who's a political commentator that I sort of like, his name is Kyle Kalinske, and he was invited to go on Fox News. And he had some ideas that were, you know, a little bit more outside of the normal Democratic talking points. And when that happened, everybody on the show kind of just froze, because he didn't just regurgitate what the Democrats would. And I think, you know, that's something that we see, and that kind of skews our conversation a little bit, because people really aren't open to ideas that are actually natural. It's kind of just, we invite people to be, like Deacon said, talking heads on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Emma Cassidy, and it's interesting that Lewis brings up the point of the difference between how Democrats and Republicans just go to regurgitate what others say, because as Deacon Mack talked about with the ad hominem standpoint in politics, that just serves to increase the partisanship, which just halts progress among both party lines and drives deeper the divide between the two party lines. So it no longer becomes one discussion, but it's just more Democrats opposing whatever plan Republicans put out and Republicans opposing whatever plans Democrats put out, no matter what the actual text or details of the plans may entail and how they might impact both parties. If it's proposed by a Democrat and you're a Republican, it's evil, and vice versa, which doesn't actually lead to any progress and only deepens the roots of partisanship and deadlock within our country.
Now, you can't be a pro-life Democrat for the most part. I mean, you can be personally, but you're not going to find the party supporting you if you run. You're not going to find people who are very liberal on immigration issues in the Republican Party, which are both very important to Catholic world. You know, obviously, pro-life is extremely important. So is immigration a big deal? Have we outgrown a dualistic party, the bi-party? Is there a need, do you think, for more voices than just two scripted approaches? Anthony.
Hey, this is Anthony Cerulli. I feel as if, because from the minute I wake up to the minute I go to sleep, the news is always on in my house, whether that be Fox 5 in the morning to CNN in the afternoon, night. My family's always watching the news. The way I look at it is, as someone said before, there's always two sides to each story. But then there's the truth. And I'm a firm believer that you need to have the truth and you need to look towards it if you want to make any change in society. So, yeah, I mean, even if there are just two sides, you need to have other voices speak out to get different opinions to reach a better society.
Alex?
Hey, it's Alex. I agree completely with the whole truth thing. As somebody who wants to be a journalist when I grow up, I find it really, well, quite frankly, disheartening to see that there isn't that balance anymore where we know what the actual truth is, whether it be of a specific situation that, you know, that just happened. When anybody talks on the news, it appears that it's scripted or it's completely biased and there's no way to ever get to the truth. So I think the most important thing to do is to not trust only one or two sources, to kind of do the research for yourself, because you're never going to have that 100% truth anymore. And it's sad, but that's how it is now.
Where do you guys go to pick up the truth on politics and social issues?
Do I identify again?
You can.
This is Emma. I think everybody's kind of accustomed to their own like news outlet, and whether we can sit here and talk about like the truth and being completely neutral and stuff, that's just not really realistic. So I think, like, if, like we were saying before, if you're more liberal, you probably go to something like CNN, and if you're more conservative, you go to something like Fox, and like either or is fine. But what I was thinking was sometimes like there isn't exactly a truth, especially with politics. And I mean, yes, there is, but on super controversial, like, national issues, there isn't going to be, like, one correct answer or one correct and that's where the different parties come into play. So I don't always think that there's going to be this, like, truth that's, like, the right thing. But I think that we definitely, as a society all together, need to learn to be more accepting of other people's values and more empathetic towards that.
There's there was a phrase once used. A evangelical preacher was preaching something, and one of his congregants came into him and said, Reverend, I wish I could be as confident about anything as you are about everything. And I think that need of humility in discussion is something that's completely lost. And that's in any institution. When it's a completely descending approach in the discussion. So, in other words, so on the principle. So I speak out of fiat. I say it and you have to do it. That will work. That will work, but it'll work at a great price. The idea of needing to understand that there's gray, subtlety, that it's not only yes or no, black or white. And in fact, today, as we celebrate Pentecost from a Catholic point of view, from a Christian point of view, you know, St. Paul talks about there is no Gentile or Jew, there's no male or female, there's no free or slave, that everyone is one in the Lord. And in a sense, the lack of subtlety or the lack of empathy or the lack of kindness is something that I'm finding very difficult to work with. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I think that I mean, I've heard the term used before, echo chambers, where we're kind of used to listening to only one perspective. And when we enter these chambers, we kind of forget that there's other people that could potentially be right. Because like Emma said, there's no 100% truth. But I think it's up to us to just be considerate about all perspectives.
You know, I think it's kind of interesting that you bring up the lack of kindness, because what that made me think about is, I think maybe a year ago at this point, The Economist had put out a political cartoon that I think speaks volumes about, you know, our political discussions today. And it was a crowd of Democrats. And one of them was holding up a sign that said disparaging things about Trump supporters. The other one was holding up a sign that said, vote for Democrats in the 2018 midterms. You know, and I think that's a really interesting part of this conversation because, you know, we have people who can't accept the fact that there are Americans who have differing opinions. Mm-hmm. And even within, you know, the Democratic Party, that's still rampant, that the idea that, you know, the average Trump supporter is someone who's just blatantly xenophobic
or
homophobic.
That was the word that was used, deplorable.
Right. I think that's wrong. You know, I think there are so many other approaches to look at. And the other thing is, these people are not only human, they're also American, you know, and just because, you know, there may be a difference in opinion doesn't mean that there's no way to try to pallet towards, you know, these people and pivot towards them without, you know, actually trying to, you know, make them out to be monsters. There are a lot of people who voted for somebody whom we disagree with for economic reasons, for, you know, anxiety reasons about changes in society. And, you know, that's something that's natural.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Noam Chomsky yet, but he's a political thinker. He's actually a linguist first, but he speaks about the fact that in the way the system is set up, and this is about 30 years old now, his statement, but I think it's as true now as it was then, that there's only one party, that the Democrats and Republicans are the flip side of each other, and that when a Democrat does something wrong, the Republicans will pounce on it, and then when a Republican does the exact same thing, the script is just—it's like they say, "Excuse me, let me see your paper. Let me give you mine," and it's the same thing. Now, you know, whether you're a fan of Chomsky's or not is not really an issue, but it is an interesting thought that we've gotten to a point where individuals are not allowed to be individuals. You know, you have to find your spot, and then you go in and you kind of give up your mind, and you know, so you can't be, you know, you can't be a fiscal conservative and at the same time saying that there's a place for immigration, or you can't be, you know, pro-life and say that we, you know, we also have to take care of the children after they're born. It's just sort of a weird situation. All right, you know, the boss just said we're going to take a little bit of a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk. I'd like to hear what you have to say about the latest shooting in Santa Fe, Texas, and that whole movement that students are kind of running with. So we look forward to having you. We want to thank Emma Baldwin, Emma Cassidy, Anthony Cerulli, Louis Savoia, and Alex Russo for being with us today. And we're going to go to some commercials, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Religion on the Line on 77 WABC. 77 WABC. 35 years ago, things were different in the world, but Religion on the Line was here, helping make sense of it all. Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick, 77 WABC.
Welcome back to Religion on the Line. We have a great show going on today. I have five of among Zverian's best. Emma Baldwin, Emma Cassidy, Anthony Cerulli, Louis Savoia, and Alex Russo, who are here. And we're just kind of speaking about topics of the day from a young person, an intelligent young person's perspective. I want to move the topic a little bit to the Santa Fe, Texas shootings that happened this week. And this is another example of there have been several. There was a Twitter war, which really kind of aggravated me, over someone saying, see how stupid, they said there were 22 and there were only like 19. If there's one shooting, that's way too much. I'm very passionate on this, but people don't really care about what I think. What are you guys thinking about this? This is happening in schools like ours. I'll be quiet. Tell me.
I think, this is Emma Baldwin, I think a lot of people can't see from a perspective of like a child in a school or a parent of a student, and these things, we're pretty much accustomed to these things. Like I saw the notification pop up on my phone and I was like, oh my God, like, but it doesn't even cross my mind the gravity of the situation until I look further into it, but these happen, I feel like, almost every week, and it shouldn't be that way, and I shouldn't see the notification on my phone and kind of, I hate to say it, but dismiss it in a way, because it's just so common. And I don't know. I think that it takes, why should somebody have to go through that to understand, and for my prerogative, at least, feel like there has to be some further reform in gun laws. Why should somebody have to experience that themselves, or be injured or lose someone that they love because of that, and then to realize that there has to be something done?
There's this, there's a UN declaration that you know, that the UN is trying to get most countries to, you know, affix their signatures to. And it's to make schools safe in war zones in countries like Yemen and Libya and places like Afghanistan that have schools that are, you know, unfortunately targets of violence. And, you know, then you really think about it and you go, well, what really makes the United States much different? That's not to say that all of our schools are in danger, you know, at the present moment, but it's kind of crazy to think that we share similarities with these countries that, you know, we commonly are debating, oh, should we intervene? Do we have to do something here? And then, you know, we take a step back and we look at our own institutions and we go, do we really feel confident in many of these schools that they're safe? You know, it's kind of just an interesting thing to look at, that we kind of live in a world where American schools, you know, have massive problems like this, something that keeps going on.
We spend a lot of time, Mr. Lisi, Mr. Wilson, the whole administrative staff, every week we meet and we kind of go over stuff, and it's frightening. Enough about me.
Well, I think that there needs to be a difference drawn between gun rights and gun control, because that's one of the biggest obstacles in actually controlling the shootings and who gets and who doesn't get guns. Because gun rights, or what many people consider the Second Amendment, when that was put in place, there were guns that could fire a single shot in a set amount of time. And now we need to introduce gun control, which is a huge difference than gun rights, because one enables somebody to have a gun while one controls the amount that that gun can do in terms of damage. And when we don't implement or when we don't even try to implement bipartisan legislation, which Congress has been trying to do but failing to do so because of partisanship, in which case the Republicans have commonly taken the stance of people need guns, and Democrats have taken the stance of trying to pretty much, or people perceive it as trying to eradicate all guns. Once we get rid of those notions, then gun control comes more easily and gun rights fit into the situation, in which we're not trying to take away everybody's guns with gun control. And when we don't implement that bipartisan legislation, and when that policy isn't enacted in order to control this, then I think that what Deacon was saying about students like taking a stance and protesting and making their voices heard, that becomes key to the situation, in which young people are now forced to try to implement or force that bipartisan legislation to come to the table and to at least be introduced or debated in some form.
Now, what do you guys think about, like, me carrying a gun in school? I mean, I that's a joke. Well, obviously, you should. Emma Baldwin's going, like, what? But the point is that's one of the solutions, is that we arm the faculty and the administration. I'm just trying to picture that. First of all, you don't want me with the gun. You know, you want me with, like, a butter knife or something. That wouldn't be that much better. But with the idea, like, or where we need metal detectors when you walk in. I mean, we have a secure school. We work very hard on that. We have a lot of retired NYPD on staff there. But, I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's interesting, because there was a poll taken recently that said a majority of, and only by a small percentage, but a majority of Republicans and Democrats both believe that having more Americans with guns could actually make less crime. So I find that to be really interesting, because, like we said, we kind of put labels on these things, like you can't have this perspective if you're of this party, but the persuasion is wrong, because, I mean, that's what it said. But I don't know, I think that you carrying a gun personally, or maybe one of our other faculty members, isn't the worst idea in the world.
Well, I think me carrying it is the worst idea in the world, but maybe there are other people that can do that.
I'll let you decide that.
Okay. We'll let Mr. Lisi do that.
Kind of piggybacking off what Alex said, I don't think that, I don't really think that, me personally at least, I feel like, how do I put this? That guns aren't the solution. Like, it's almost living in this constant world of fear, and I don't think that anyone really operates off that. All of these, like, shootings and, like, rallies that, like, hurtful things that are, like, religiously, they try to affiliate that with, like, religion, but God doesn't want that for anyone. God doesn't want people to have their hands up and carrying guns all the time and living in constant fear in schools about that. I think that that's where it gets twisted, just like we were talking about before, the Republican versus Democrat. It's not what it is supposed to be. It's not with God and religion, it's not really about love and respect anymore. It's about who is that and who's that, and it's very twisted.
For this segment, Emma, you're going to have the last word. We're going to take a natural break here, pay some bills, and when we get back, we'll continue this great conversation with Emma Baldwin, Emma Cassidy, Mike Cerulli, Louis Savoia, and Alex Russo from Xaverian High School.
Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick return right after this on WABC.
So we've spent the first half hour of our time speaking with Emma Baldwin, Emma Cassidy, Mike Cerulli, Anthony Savoia, and Alex Russo about different issues in the world. Let's get a little bit about you guys. So where are you in the next 10 years? Where are you in the next 15 years? What are your dreams? Anthony.
So I actually have two career paths that I'm really interested in. One of these are actually where I'm sitting right now, and I really want to be involved with the radio. And the last time that you brought me and Alex over to 77 WABC.
Well done.
And,
nicely done there.
Yeah,
well done.
The little label on the top.
Very good.
You know, I sat in the chair and I started speaking in front of the mic, and that only strengthened my interest in this. So I can't thank you enough to have us on again.
You're doing me a much bigger favor. Tell me more about you.
Oh, yeah. So another career path, which my mom's probably going to get annoyed with me bringing this up because it's not as realistic as she would hope. I really want to be a director, and I was having a conversation with her in the car about this the other day, and she was saying, you know, you don't really go to college to become, like, a director. You know, you try to get something more realistic, but in my eyes, you kind of have to, like, aim big, because then that means you're going to work harder to your towards your goal, you know, aim for bigger things, work harder, and, like, even if you don't become, like in my case, a director, there's still other career paths related to that that I could still be interested in, and you know, still be satisfied. So,
as a parent, you want your kids to have something that so they'll be able to eat.
Right,
like that's an important thing. But you also need to follow your bliss, and many times when you do, money finds you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's you have time, you have plenty of time.
Yeah.
But I understand your parents' concern very much. I have the same concerns. But that's great. That's great. Follow your bliss. Alex.
So I love that Anthony said that he wants to do different career paths, because I'm a very big believer in the term multi-potentialite, which is basically someone with...
Just say that again. I never heard that word before.
Multi-potentialite.
Mm-hmm.
It's from a speech that I gave.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
I take no credit for coming up with that term. But it's basically someone with many different interests and creative pursuits, something that tells us we should all be able to... pursue many career goals. And for myself personally, I love sports journalism. Currently, I write for an app called FanSided, two of their sites, Blue Line Station and Puck Pros, because I'm a big Rangers fan. And that's what I want to do. But, you know, I have other interests. I love psychology. I definitely want to minor in quantum physics when I get to college, because I absolutely love that stuff. But I don't know. I think it's really great to be interested in many different pathways and go wherever life leads you, wherever God leaves you.
It's the first time in the history of radio where quantum physics and the Rangers are in the same paragraph. Well done. Lewis.
So I'm going to become a part of the deep state.
WABC, that's a whole thing.
Yeah. in all seriousness, you know, there's a lot that goes on in our government that we really don't know about. And, you know, people have told me to do things like run for office, but... You know, that's something I grapple with because it's, you know, it's kind of difficult to do that and keep a level of, you know, ethics when you run for office. But I definitely...
Actually, we have alums and friends of our school who are in public office or have been in public office. And they're men of integrity. There's no question of that. But the hits that they take.
Right.
I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why, you know, I look at people like, you know, Bernie Sanders or Beto O'Rourke in Texas, people like these who have... kind of done away with the idea of taking in massive amounts of corporate cash to, you know, to keep going. But I want to do something with the government, definitely something with foreign relations, because I think that's a field that I'm really interested in, and I always really have been interested in that.
That's cool.
You know, I always look at the way that we interact with the world and, you know, looking at the different situations going on, it makes me think that there needs to be some changes. And, you know, for the people who are sitting in the back rooms, you know, making the deals, deciding when we go to war, who we draft, you know, these are people that, you know, kind of need to be replaced. So
Nice. So in 10 years, if I do ask you what you're doing for a living, you won't be able to tell me, or you'll have to kill me, is what I'm hearing.
Probably.
Fair enough. Emma Baldwin.
This is kind of not something that you hear every day because it's kind of a new field, and I was actually talking to Alex about this the other day, but I was always very interested in the arts and music and everything, and my mom is actually an artist, and speaking of like a practical job or a practical career, my mom went to art school, and she has a degree from FIT in fine arts, so she made a career for herself doing something that she loves, and I think that my interest was in that, but I also wanted to do something with like social work or something like that, and what I wanted to do is study art therapy and work with primarily children who have any kind of like issues or work through anything, because I work at an art camp in the summer, and I really found that through art and human interaction was something that I definitely want to pursue.
You touch kids at their soul. And that's and they may not have the linguistic abilities, of course, with impairment or whatever the case may be. My son is autistic, and you know certain limits that he has. But when you deal with music or art, you touch a part of the person that's not just cerebral or just not you know based on IQ, but the soul of the person. That's beautiful. Very well done, Emma Cassidy.
For a while, I've kind of had like a set career path. I've always been really interested in law. And kind of
economics. I so desperately wanted to go like dun, dun. But I wouldn't do that and interrupt you. I would never do that.
For the first like after college, so if you talk to me in 10 years I'll still be in college because law school takes forever, but for the first 10 years of my career I think I want to be a prosecutor, and then eventually move on to the counterterrorism unit of the FBI, and then after that go to the behavioral analysis unit. That's kind of been like my plan for a solid like 4 years now. So that's like law has just always been something that's like really caught my attention just because of kind of the nuances of it and different ways that it can be interpreted and implemented. So that's always been kind of like what I've gone to for a career choice.
You know what's great? You guys are like 15 and 16 years old, I assume. That's pretty much where you're. Maybe you're 17. Yeah, I'm not sure. But what's great is that you have visions. Now, who knows where God's going to end? When I was your age, I thought I was going to be a psychologist. I thought I was going to be a priest. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. And I ended up an administrator in a Catholic high school, which I'm thrilled with. It's a great vocation. But wherever you go, you're bringing an integrity, an intelligence, and a humanity that we couldn't be more proud of. We're going to take one more break, and when we come back, I'd like to hear about what you guys think about spirituality, about religion. So, since it's religion on the line. Oh, and by the way, congratulations, Mary Lou from New Hope, Pennsylvania. You're going to be joining our friends. I got to go through my papers here, make sure I have them right. George and Chris, I think Lewis should be right with me all the time. George, Chris, and Mary Lou, congratulations on getting the tickets for the concert. It's going to be delightful.
This is WABC's Religion on the Line. 77 WABC. Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Deacon Kevin McCormick. 77 WABC.
Hey, welcome back to Religion Online. I'm Deacon Kevin McCormick. Rabbi Potasnik is celebrating the great Jewish feast of Passover, and we're celebrating the great Christian feast of Passover. Jews believe this is the time they receive the law, and Christians where we receive the Holy Spirit. We've had a great show. We started off with a bunch of people who are really talking about helping kids through foster care, moving them into the next step, and you can learn more about them at www.housetohome.org. And then the rest of the show has been with five of my students, Emma Baldwin, Emma Cassidy, Anthony Cerulli, Louis Savoia, and Alex Russo. And we've been speaking about all kinds of different topics. Since it's Religion Aligned, since it's Pentecost, we'd like to take the last 7 minutes or so and just tell me, where is your spirituality? What's going on in the religious life of a teenager? And you want to just go round the table? You want to start? Okay.
Well, I think that we live in a world where it can be increasingly described as a society of organizations, which then it becomes incumbent upon the people to do their research as to what category or group they fit into. So when you want to describe yourself as spiritual, you need to know the reasons behind it. And it's not necessarily like preaching on street corners and going around screaming how God is the only thing that you can ever believe in. I think it's more coming from real life experiences. Like, my family has had its fair share of health problems. My brother was born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome, and has probably had more surgeries than birthdays at this point. And my Uncle Ed is struggling with cancer. So I think that knowing that miracles can happen where, like, my brother, if another person went through what he had, there's probably very little chance that they would have survived. And I don't think that it's realistic that without some higher being, there would be a chance at survival for the thousands of people in similar situations. And I think that coming from real life experiences, you really find where spirituality fits into your life. And it doesn't necessarily have to be Catholicism. It doesn't have to be religion. It can be just thinking that there's something else there, and finding
something
your
bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Emma.
I think that a part of high school in general and being a teenager is growing up and, like, realizing things. And I know for myself in this past year, I've definitely struggled with the idea of Catholicism, because that's just what I've grown up with, and that's just what I've kind of been told to believe in. And, you know, I really took the liberty of, like, actually learning more and not just sitting in a class, not really paying attention for 40 minutes a day. I really started looking into it and seeing what it was about. And a lot of us were talking about we believe in a God because somebody has been through a miracle or lived through something medical or whatever. And for me, it was losing somebody when I felt like it wasn't exactly the time, and very suddenly. I think that that's where I really started struggling with it. But for me, struggling with it was more the idea of this perfectly outlined church and what we're supposed to believe in, and if you have to follow certain rules to get to heaven and certain rules, and if you don't follow those, then you go to hell. And I just, for me, struggling with it wasn't just about that. It was feeling like there was something more, but it didn't have to just be so black and white all the time.
Catholicism, when it's best, is really sloppy. So I'm glad you're struggling. I am glad you're struggling, frankly, and I'm glad you're working through it. And keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think living in a society such as this one, it's pretty hard to live a life centered around God, especially for me. But I feel as if you don't necessarily have to live your life with God as the center. Rather, you need to just be aware that he's there, whether you believe in him or not. And there are certain times in our lives that this really comes into play. This came into play, actually, not too long ago. I lost my family dog, Lucky. He was about 12 years old. And at the time, I started questioning God a bit. Like, you know, I've had this dog for so long. Why didn't a miracle happen? But I think in some cases, the miracle itself is just how he is in a better place now, as many would say.
The Pope would agree with you on that.
God works in mysterious ways. And, you know, once we come to realize that he's there for us regardless, then we'll live a better life.
Especially, and the relationship with your pet, with your dog, was love. I mean, that's what. If you haven't owned a dog, you don't understand it. If you own a dog, you do understand it. Yeah. You can't even talk about it.
Right.
Alex,
God, in my opinion, is seen in the smallest, most sometimes in our minds insignificant ways. I see God in doing this morning because it makes me happy. You know, something really simple. And I think that a lot of times we take those things for granted, but God is everywhere. God is love. God is life. And I just think that the more you're able to realize that, and the closer you'll be to God. It's okay to, you know, struggle with faith every once in a while. That happens. It's called being human. I think the struggle actually ends up making us closer to him. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing, but you have to be open to all the possibilities of what religion is. And I don't think that the Bible in and of itself is... you know, there's definitely things in there that you can read and it'll be a little bit confusing, but I think just as long as you believe, you'll be good.
Lewis, final word.
I said this before. I've never really seen an angel come down and speak to me, but, you know, I think that's not what you need to recognize that God is there, because I've done my own share of struggling, you know, in my time. But I think the thing that keeps me going on the idea that there really is, you know, a higher being is just, you know, that feel like God is a feeling to me, at least. Because when I'm with people that I care about, like now, or, you know, when I'm hanging out with friends or something, there's a sense of, you know, of community and happiness that I think couldn't be possible unless you had a higher being that kind of translates that way. Because we kind of try to think that God speaks through, you know, the person who's giving the sermon on Sunday. But, you know, that might not necessarily be the case for everyone. And I think that's open to interpretation for people about what God means to them. And if that's the case, then I think everyone has their own personal God, per se, that shows himself in a lot of different ways.
You guys are absolutely terrific, and you're a great gift. And I feel a lot more confident about the future when I walk around the halls of our school when I'm with you. The struggle of spirituality, if you all said like your faith is perfect and you know everything, you'd be like little Stepford kids, and that's scary. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, a relationship with God is one that does take a lifetime to be involved in.